from the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. Welcome to the first radio show for DC Public Safety for 2015. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. The program today is the Superior Court's Drug Courts program here in Washington, DC. We have two individuals by our microphones. We have the Honorable Gregory Jackson, Associate Judge, Superior Court of the District of Columbia. He is the presiding judge at Drug Court. And we're going to have Gene, and we're just going to use his first name. He is a graduate of the Drug Court program here in Washington, D.C. to talk about everything Drug Court, and to Judge Jackson and to Gene, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you for having us here.
Well, Judge Jackson, drug courts are immensely important throughout the United States. It is really something that's picking up steam within the last couple years. The Washington, D.C. Superior Court was one of the first to implement drug court programs, correct?
That's correct. We started our program in 1993. This is now going into our 22nd year of operation. We're one of the oldest courts in the United States.
And you work in conjunction with our sister agency here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, Pretrial Services Agency, plus a lot of other agencies, correct?
That's correct. It is very much a collaborative effort on the part of all of the criminal justice agencies that operate here in the District of Columbia, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Public Defender Service, obviously Pretrial Services Agency, the Criminal Defense Bar, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the Department of Corrections, the D.C. Department of Corrections.
And for the uninitiated, give a 30-second layman-esque overview as to what drug court is.
Drug court is a sanction and incentive-based program. It's an alternative to the traditional case processing that takes place in court with criminal cases. We're one of the few programs in the country that is a pre-trial program. Most of the drug court programs around the country are post-adjudication. That is, the defendant is convicted, pleads guilty, and then is given the opportunity to participate in a drug court program. In our program, once a defendant is arrested and charged with an offense, if he or she qualifies for the program, they're given an opportunity to voluntarily participate in the program. Its treatment services are primarily provided by the pretrial service agency. If you have a qualifying misdemeanor offense, you successfully complete the program, that case at graduation is dismissed.
Considering how long the program has been going, you've literally seen, what, hundreds if not thousands of people go through drug court since the mid-1990s?
Since for the program itself, there have been thousands of people who've gone through the program.
Amazing.
In the 2 years that I have presided over the program, we're probably well into the hundreds. I'm not sure that I'm at 1,000 yet, but well into the high hundreds.
And the recidivism rate is pretty daggone good, which means that literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people who would have continued throughout the criminal justice system stop being involved in the criminal justice system because you provide both drug treatment through pretrial services and other partnering agencies, and the sanctions process, the heavy hand of fate, that you know, if they do well or if they screw up, they see you. You are very personally involved in these cases.
I'm directly involved with each individual. In the beginning, those people who come into the drug court in the first phase, and there are four phases to the program. In the first two phases of the program, I see them every 2 weeks. They have to come to court every 2 weeks to essentially check in with me. I get status reports on how they're doing, whether there are problems, and if there are problems, we talk collectively as a team about how best to address the problem. If they need other services, if we can't provide them, we do referrals. And if they're doing well, of course, we acknowledge and congratulate them. And we have little token gifts that we actually give as incentives for those people who are doing well.
And the DC Superior Court has really taken the lead for the country in terms of specialty courts. So there's an endless array of specialty courts within the Superior Court structure within the District of Columbia. So it's just not drug courts, it's family courts. There's a lot of different courts.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. I want to go over to Gene. Gene, you're a graduate of the drug court program, and I want to get your sense of as to how you felt about your participation in the process. I mean, having the presiding judge here is extremely important, but I think more people are interested in what you have to say than what I have to say or what Judge Jackson has to say. So give me your perceptions about your participation in the drug court program.
Well, it was the... It was almost like the last straw for me, you know, at my age at the time. I caught a charge and, you know, and I had a real drug habit, and I was trying to get rid of the drug habit, you know. And I was just tired out there in the street and couldn't keep my urines clean. And the caseworker, the court referred me to drug court. And I can say that's one of the best things that happened to me. First, I didn't know what I was getting into by going to drug court, you know, going to these meetings. And once I withdraw from use of drugs and alcohol, I felt a little comfortable in the group, because when I first came to groups, I couldn't even hardly talk, you know, because I was going through a lot of withdrawals, you know. But one of the things is the caseworkers, they understood me. A lot of the people went through the same thing that I had went through, so that was a great help to me, you know. And I look forward to coming down here, you know, because it was so much information that was given to me, you know, and it's like I was on my last straw.
Did you have a long drug history?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Yes, I did.
Did you have a long involvement within the criminal justice system?
In and out of the criminal justice system, no. I was in and out almost like a career nuisance, you know. And all my charges was drug-related.
Now, you were involved in treatment before, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So what was the secret sauce with drug court? I mean, am I right? Quickly tell me if I'm wrong, but am I right in suggesting that you did not do well within previous treatment programs, and then you got the drug court, and then you did well?
Well, for one thing, what I like about drug court, you know, and it was surprising to me, all the staff members always say, Mr. or Mrs. They call you Mr. or Mrs. You know, and they treated like you was a human being. In other treatment programs, not putting them down, it was like, you know, they was like trying to force things on you. But here, you know, it was more like a mild case of treatment, you know. And if you had a caseworker that you know, and I came real close to my caseworker, that I can go to her and talk to her almost about anything. And, you know, and I still consider her as my caseworker today.
So you were able to establish a personal relationship between the treatment providers provided by pretrial services. You were able to establish that personal relationship, and that helped you.
Yes, yes, because, you know, one thing, you know, every time I'm down this way, I stop in and I talk to her. I still call her my caseworker and her supervisor and a lot of the other staff, you know, because I need all the support I can, though. You know, I don't say I have it made, so that's why I continue to come down here when I'm not working, because I am a productive member of society today.
Sure.
You know, so whenever I get a chance to come down here, you know, the graduation or just stopping in and say, look, I'm doing okay, or even, you know, even if I have a problem or situation going on with myself, I have these people I can come and talk to, and that's a great thing for me, you know, because this is one of the things I didn't do in the past, was to tell people my problem. You know, I try to resolve them myself, but now that I know if I'm down this way and I got a problem, I can call them or even stop in.
Now,
that's a great thing for
me. Here's the question I have for you. Having Judge Jackson up at that bench, and interacting with the judge, was that a factor in terms of your clean participation in the program, your full participation in the program? Because I've talked to a lot of people about drug courts in the past 25 years by doing radio and television shows, and they told me or suggested to me that having that judge sitting up there and interacting with you on a regular basis, you did not want to disappoint the judge. You did not want to go through that process. So is there something that judges bring to the table that the rest of the system cannot bring to the table? That gives you that extra push to get involved in treatment and make it work?
Well, Judge Jackson wasn't my presiding judge at the time, but the judge that it was similar to Judge Jackson. You know, they gave you some guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And all at the same time, it's like when you do something wrong, your mother will spank you. If it's like, you know, you get test chastised for things that you, and, you know, give you a lecture. You know, but you really have to be at your lowest point, though, you know, to say, man, hey, look, I'm going to listen to what this judge say and the rest of the staff say, because I'm tired of using drugs and alcohol.
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. But I've talked to so many people who have said to me throughout the course of my history and my career, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, yet they find themselves in the criminal justice system. What's the secret sauce behind drug court? What do you think is the real key ingredient that makes drug court work?
For one thing, is, you know, I can't say enough about the staff, the way they treat you, you know. And I'm only can talk about myself, you know, the relationship that I had with my caseworker. That and I feel that everyone needs someone to talk to, and especially us drug abusers of alcohol and that we need someone to talk to, and it's definitely a relationship with your caseworker, and then the rest of the clients, you know, you establish a relationship with them, people who are serious about recovering. And, you know, you get their phone numbers, and if you have any problem, you can talk to them about it. Or, you know, most of you bring it to groups. It was just so unique. It's hard to try to explain these meetings that we go to went to because I just can't say enough about drug court.
Your Honor, I'm going to go back to you. Now, both of us have been involved in the criminal justice system for a long time. I find the stories of Gene and other people who have been through drug court and especially courts inspiring. We've been exposed to so much failure within the criminal justice system. It's nice to be exposed to this amount of success. I mean, how does it affect you personally?
Well, you can't help but be motivated and inspired and moved by the change that occurs in people and in their lives when they successfully complete the program. During the course of the time that I've been on the program, I've seen people physically change. They go from being very unhealthy to being so healthy at times that when the attorneys see them later on, they don't even recognize them. We see people who have poor relationships with their families, with their friends. Damn. Now all of a sudden their family and friends are back involved in their lives again. We see people who are very talented, but their talent is masked by the use of drugs, and all of a sudden that talent emerges, and we have people who are poets and artists and capable of doing all kinds of things, and they start to do that again. We have people who haven't worked in years, if at all. Now all of a sudden they're employed and they're doing well and they're being productive in the community. So the drug court experience is a life-changing experience, and I'm just honored to be able to be a part of that and to be able to participate in helping people change and improve their lives.
Because the question can go to either one of you. We're not just talking about the individual. We're not just talking about Gene. We're not just talking about Judge Jackson. We're talking about that individual's family, that individual's friends, whether or not he or she works, whether or not he or she is a tax burden or a taxpayer, whether or not the kids are taken care of properly, because virtually everybody calls up in the criminal justice system has kids to one degree or another. So this is not just a program. This is a life-changing event in the lives of people who otherwise could go on to be not just a pain in the rear to society, but possibly a danger to society and possibly a danger to their own kids. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is fundamentally a changing experience in the lives of these individuals.
That's absolutely right. I routinely tell people who are before me that not only do they suffer from their addiction, but everybody around them, everyone close to them, suffers from that addiction as well. And so as they get better, everyone around them, the community gets better, the families get better, everyone gets better. And that's one of the reasons why this process is so very important. The other thing that I think it's important for people to understand is that one of the things that I think makes our program successful, and probably works in other programs as well, we look at the underlying causes of the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We talk and work with the individuals to identify what their triggers are. What we've discovered is certainly what I've discovered since doing this in the last 2 years, that trauma and mental health play a big part in the addiction, so that As part of our program, we're not only working on people in terms of their addiction, we're working on them to address sometimes trauma that hasn't been diagnosed and treated forever, mental health issues that have never been diagnosed and treated. And so it's a multifaceted process when we talk about the treatment that most of the program participants undergo.
I do want to get involved or explore that question a little bit more, because I've been talking to people who have been through these sort of programs for years, and they describe it as the hardest thing that they've ever had to do, because they had to confront all those triggers that have led them to be involved in the substance abuse issue. But we're more than halfway through the program. Let me reintroduce both of you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a program today on drug courts, the Superior Court drug court program here in Washington, D.C. We have before our microphones the Honorable Gregory Jackson, Associate Judge of the Superior Court of the District of Columbia. He is the presiding judge of drug court. And we have Gene, and we're just using his first name. He is a graduate of the drug court program, again, here in Washington, D.C. www.dccourts.gov, www.dccourts.gov. And for our sister agency, Pretrial, www.psa.gov. Those are the websites for the two agencies involved. Gene, I'm going to go over to you for that question that I asked right before the break, is that people who are involved in substance abuse and go through the treatment process describe it as one of the scariest things they've ever had to encounter. People don't understand how difficult drug treatment, mental health treatment is, because you have to confront all of the things that you went through in life that triggered your addiction. Am I right or wrong?
That's true. And the first thing to start off, you have to be honest to yourself. That's one thing, and be willing to talk about yourself and feel comfortable with the person who you're talking to about yourself. Because we, as drug addicts, we don't like to talk about ourselves. You know, I'm going to say myself, I put up a big image, you know, that everything is okay, you know, but it's not, you know. I found that's why I talked about my caseworker, how I got so close to her. And this was a woman that I became close to, that me and her used to talk about everything. And when I came there, I was broken down. I was broken down. I had a lot of health issues and had to miss some groups and everything. But I went to her and I explained to her, look, I got a doctor's appointment. And she said, okay, we'll make up for this group. And, you know, she understood, you know. Way people look at me now, when I came in, I was a shade darker, and me and her laugh at this now. When I came in here, I came in with my hair all knotted to my head. Like I said, I was a shade darker. I had a rope for my belt, and I was dirty, and I was snake. But she didn't turn her back on me. You know, so when I felt comfortable talking to this woman, you know, I got to tell her about everything.
But it's the demons. I mean, how many demons did you have to face in life to get successfully through the process of completing drug court? I mean, all the triggers, all the different things that contributed to your substance abuse history, confronting those is a scary process.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, I was at my lowest point. So whatever that I feel that would work for me, you know, I was willing to do it. You know, I was the type of person, I used to any type of drug it is. If you know, I don't care what the type of drug it is, you say it would change my mood, I would use it.
Right.
Because I didn't want to deal with Gene.
Right.
But today, you know, I don't got where I can, I have people in my life that I can talk to. You know, so that's really helping me to, you know, to face a lot of this, because it ain't going nowhere. The same thing is out there, but it's the way I deal with it today.
So we're not talking about criminal justice policy as much as we are talking about, Your Honor, saving human beings. I mean, in decades before drug court, Gene would have filtered in and out of the system endlessly. He would have picked up a stretch, a 10-year stretch, and he would have gone off to prison, and taxpayers would have had to pay that amount of money. And we can intervene in the lives of human beings through mental health treatment, through drug treatment, through other interventions, and we can successfully take people who are struggling and who are either a danger or a pain in the rear to society and stop that process. We stop the revolving door. Is that right or wrong?
I think that that's right. And I think it's important to recognize that over the years, the science has taught us that addiction is, in fact, a disease.
Yes.
And for a long time, we treated it as just a behavioral choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought was, well, someone's choosing to behave this way. If we tell them not to and we punish them for doing it, that will encourage them or force them to change, and everything will be fine. Now we understand that, in fact, it is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you have to treat the disease just as you the disease of addiction just as you would treat any other type of disease. And so the emphasis has shifted. We now are focused on the individual. Our treatment process is individualized. Even in court, when I hold a hearing and I have individuals in front of me, each individual is their own, is treated separately.
Mm-hmm.
And based on their unique situation. And so, and we try to allow for that, we try to accommodate that, and we try to identify what's different about this individual and what's different about their needs and the way the disease is impacting them, and how best can we provide the treatment they need to be better.
But I don't want to oversell the process at the same time. You, as the presiding judge, need to be on that bench and read more than just a couple people the Riot Act, because when they turn in that drug positive, or that second drug positive, or that third drug positive, or they don't show up at the meetings, or they show up at the meetings and they don't contribute, or they show up at the meetings and act as a detriment to the group process. I mean, you've got to sit at that bench and look at that person eyeball to eyeball and start asking that person a series of very hard questions.
That's exactly right. And I think it's important that I get an opportunity to do that. One of the big differences between drug court and what happens in a normal criminal courtroom is there is not that interaction between the judge and the defendant. In fact, in a regular criminal courtroom, the judge will not talk to the defendant. The judge
mm-hmm.
talks to the defendant's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a defense attorney there. There's a prosecutor there. They actually say very little. I'm able to actually personally engage the defendant because we're not talking about their case.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about what's going on with that individual. And I think that that helps. One, it lets the individual know that I'm engaged, involved, and interested and concerned about their treatment and their recovery.
Mm-hmm.
It also lets them know that they're a person, they're a human being, and I, Mr. Gene's point is very important, because we do want people to know that they can participate in the program, that they have dignity, we do respect them, and we're there to help them, and they're safe.
But they're safe, but at the same time, the secret sauce in so much of the success in terms of the specialty court seems to be the judge. Seems to be that judge who gets personally involved in the life of that person. And also, at the same time, I think judges carry a greater sense of power than those of us in the rest of the criminal justice system. Police officers can say what we want to say. Pre-trial folks can say it. Parole and probation agents, what we call community supervision officers here in the District of Columbia, can say it. But there's something about the judge saying it that sometimes scares the bejeevies out of people and makes them take their treatment process seriously. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. And sometimes I have to remind individuals that I am the judge.
Yes.
And that I have the power and
to
the authority
send them away.
To send them away. And it's necessary to do that. You'd be surprised. It doesn't happen often that they get it and I don't have to remind them of it. But there are sometimes individuals, particularly in the early stages of the program, who have to be reminded of the fact that this is a courtroom, I'm the judge, and I do have the authority to impose significant sanctions if they don't participate.
I've just been told by other drug court graduates, not just here, but in the state of Maryland and elsewhere, that it was the judge, Gene, that sat and it was there and simply said, if you don't comply, here are the consequences. You've had three positives. I will not accept a fourth. That seems to carry more cachet. That seems to carry more weight than coming from a parole and probation agent or a pretrial supervision officer's point of view. Having the judge say it seems to carry the word of, I don't mean to be blasphemous here, but the word of God.
That carries weight. That
yeah.
carries weight when the judge says that. No, you know, it's very scary. And then you have the choice to make. Do I want to continue using drugs? Or do I want to go to jail? You know, one thing I have to say this also, though, right? You get in drug court, and the judge don't always talk about jail. He's giving you instructions towards life, which you can do to better yourself. And even the caseworkers give you the same. They're giving you instructions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not so much of we're gonna lock you up, though. You know, it's so much instruction on how you can better yourself,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I pursued it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would help me because I was at my, like I said, I was at my lowest point and I was willing to change.
5 minutes left on the program. Your Honor or Gene, where do we take the discussion in terms of drug court? You know, the sense that I get is that we could, if we doubled, tripled, quadrupled the opportunity for people to be involved in drug court, we could substantially lower the rate of recidivism. We could lower the burden on taxpayers tremendously. The District of Columbia has had a fairly significant reduction in crime over the course of the last 10, 15, 20 years, and some people have attributed that to the fine work of the Metropolitan Police Department and other law enforcement agencies. Some people have attributed that to pretrial and court services and offender supervision agency. But I get the sense because of the specialty courts within the Superior Court that you guys can take a lot of credit for the crime reduction within Washington, D.C. Am I right or wrong?
I'd like to think that that's true, although it is very much a collaborative effort on the part of all of the different agencies that you've named that has resulted in the reduction of crime in D.C. But hopefully we're playing an important role, and we think that we are. I think that it's important that, again, we go back to the point of as the people who participate in the drug court program get better,
mm-hmm.
yes,
their families get better,
yes.
mm-hmm. their communities get better,
mm-hmm.
other people see them and the example that they now set in terms of the lives that they lead, and they too want to get better. So it has a ripple effect on the whole of the population that is affected by the addiction that we encounter.
Because the average person within the criminal justice system, if you take a look at national statistics, they don't get drug treatment. The average person caught up in the criminal justice system, the average person on parole and probation, the average person on pretrial, the average person incarcerated. I was just taking a look at data the other day, is saying that the great majority of people in prison who have mental health problems do not
yes.
get mental health treatment. And you provide mental health treatment as well as drug treatment.
We do. And we look at healing the whole individual. So when you talk about addressing an individual's addiction, you have to talk about all of the things that are contributing to and impacting that addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And very often there are health issues. We have had people who, because of physical conditions, were using drugs to kill the pain, dull the pain. And so we refer them for medical treatment. And
mm-hmm.
once they start to take better care of their health,
mm-hmm.
then their need for painkillers, for the mm-hmm. for the drugs, it goes away.
Yeah. Gene, in the final minute and a half of the program, what would you say to other people who are going through life and considering the drug court program? If they have an opportunity to be involved in the drug court program, what's your advice to them?
Give yourself a chance. You know,
so many people have given up. So many people say, I cannot shake my addiction.
Well, you know, a lot of people would say because they don't want to. But, you know, one of the biggest problems I think that a lot of people revert back to drugs and alcohol is because of employment. You know, and that's one of the biggest problems. Lack of employment.
Okay.
You know, because they figured that, you know, hey, these people is not going to hire me because of my background. But you can't give up. I didn't give up, though, and you'll be surprised where I'm at far as job-wise today. So that's what I would say one of the biggest problems is employment. You know, and I'd like to say something about what Judge Jackson said. It brings your family back to you, you know, because it brought my family back. My daughters was out of my life for years, and my daughters are back into my life, you know, and I won't give this up for the world, you know.
Judge Jackson, the final word. So for everybody listening to this, they should invest in drug courts. That's the bottom line.
I would encourage the various jurisdictions that don't have drug court programs to really give serious thought to starting a drug court program.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've done a program today about drug courts here in the District of Columbia through the Superior Superior Court. Our guests today have been the Honorable Gregory Jackson, Associate Judge, Superior Court of the District of Columbia. He is the presiding court, presiding judge for drug court. And Gene, we didn't use Gene's full name or last name, but he's a graduate of the drug court program. To both of you, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your comments, and we even appreciate your criticisms, and we want everybody to have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.